Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. That's what day it is. Thursday morning. It is the 3rd of January, and very nice to have you all with us. Let me introduce our panel, and we'll get started. A reminder, you can join in on the conversation. You know you want to. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We have Judy Patrick with us. She is Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy Patrick.
Good morning. I came down from the snowy north to find no snow down here.
I know. It's a bit, you and I come from very similar quarters, and it was certainly worse up there than it was down here.
Exactly.
But you made it, and that's all that counts.
Easy peasy.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Coming from the southern regions.
Yes, good morning. I had a long commute from the other studio. That's why I'm late.
I was apparently. We noticed. Ira Fussfeld is with us. He's Daily Freeman Publisher Emeritus, and we welcome Ira. Good morning, Ira.
Nice to see you. Happy New Year to everybody.
Very nice to have you with us. Fran Berman is here. She is the Edward Hamilton Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPI and a faculty associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Fran, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. No snow at my house.
Good. I'm glad.
Just in case anyone wanted
excellent.
To know.
Oh, did you want a weather report? I had snow in Woodstock.
You did?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
A little slippery until I got to the thruway.
Alan Chartek is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hello. I'm a little tired. Yesterday we had quite a day here, thanks to you, Joe. We had a lot of attention paid because the governor came on for, a half an hour and made some real news. He endorsed
he said that Joe Biden would make the best choice, right?
He did Joe Biden. And then he also took on the state Senate and basically said, if I can translate, if they investigate me, I'm going to investigate them. Made a lot of headlines, I can tell you that much.
Good stuff. Well, let's see how we do today. We have a lot to talk about, so we'll get started. We welcome your letters, as I mentioned, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. The shutdown continues. You ask why. Well, a room full of politicians yesterday, they all got together. They sat down for a while, and they came up with nothing. They couldn't agree on much. And not that maybe many people expected them to do it, but both sides digging in their heels. Democrats saying that they're not budging on their plan not to give the President of the United States the $5 billion that he wants for border security or a wall or a fence or whatever it is at this moment. And he said, I would look foolish if I did that, Mr. Trump responded after Senator Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader, posed the question to him directly, which was basically, can't we just move on and break the impasse? And President Trump has said that this is now a very lengthy partial shutdown. It is the and this meeting is the first in 22 days and could not break the impasse over the president's demand for the money for the wall. The president said he was elected because of the wall. And he was not going to budge. Democrats were equally adamant, according to one official who was present for the discussion, pressed by Vice President Mike Pence. That brings up Alan's point yesterday that the vice president actually spoke at this meeting and said that they were refusing to budge. So that is where we are right now. We'll get into how this is affecting us as people in a moment, meaning the shutdown, but let's talk about the politics of it first.
Trump is in a corner because the Democrats have offered a perfectly reasonable way for him to get out of this and for the Republicans to get out of this by saying, let's open up, let's fund the agencies that are not involved with border security, and let's get border security back to where it is right now, and let's discuss it further. And it seems like a perfectly reasonable response to most people, yet the president and Mitch McConnell are saying no. McConnell's saying no because he doesn't want to say yes until he knows Trump's going to say yes. So I think they gave him a chance to get out of it somewhat gracefully, and he was not sharp enough to see that.
Isn't McConnell and part of the problem here, though, in the sense of saying we're not going to put anything forward if the president isn't going to sign it, and yet do we have a full sense that McConnell knows what the president is or is not going to sign?
Right, and once again, Trump stepped on his own people yesterday at the cabinet meeting when a reporter asked, "I understand you're willing to take $2.5 million," and he said, "No, I don't know where that came from. We want $5.6 million." Where that came from was from Mike Pence, among others, who said he might be willing to accept $2.5 billion.
Yeah, the one thing Trump is good at is marketing, and I think what he's got to do is retreat a couple of steps and figure out how to save some face through expert marketing. Maybe they'll call this wall something else, or maybe they won't call the wall built, or he'll downplay it. I think the Democrats hold all the cards on this one, and he's just got to find a way to save face.
So my favorite part of this is, and you'll help me if I mispronounce the name, Mickey Sherry, a congressperson from New Jersey.
Cheryl, I think it is.
Cheryl?
Mickey
okay.
Cheryl.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you very
newly
much.
Newly elected.
Yeah, and she said, I'm not going to accept money while the government shut down.
As you did the new congressman from Staten Island, Rose, I believe his name, Max Rose.
So, you know, here's a good question. Why do different rules apply to Congress and then apply to the rest of the 800,000 government employees who are worried about their water bill, their light bill, their mortgages, who are going to work without pay, who are not sure if they're going to get pay if they go to work, get pay later for going to work? It's a good question.
Alan?
Well, no, I think all the points I'm keeping shut because I think all the points that have been made here are excellent. I think that the president is, in fact, in the corner. I've often talked about this president in the corner, and that's when he gets most dangerous, because if you put a rat in a corner and you come close to it, it's going to bite you. I think that that's the case. Now, I think right now, this president is enough of a megalomaniac so that he will think that everything he says is right just because he says it. And I don't think he's likely to get out of the corner unless, of course, something happens in which his Republican colleagues in the Senate tell him that they're getting hurt so badly that they have to do something.
And they could pressure McConnell, and McConnell could change his position and put something up for a vote.
Yeah, McConnell is the senior player in the room, Judy. You're exactly right. And he has refused to do anything that the president doesn't want him to do. Because in Kentucky, they like the president. Utah, not so much. But in Kentucky, they do. He is not going to swerve away from that president because he knows the president bites and has bitten McConnell in the past.
So, you know, a really good question is, you know, why don't other countries have government shutdowns by and large? And their systems are robust enough that they don't have to take it out on the people of the country when they disagree. So, you know, either the budget is paid through some other mechanism or, you know, the party in power gets voted out because they can't form a government that functions and can pass a budget. I mean, there's lots of other mechanisms that people use, and it's a little surprising that, you know, we still have not created a mechanism that allows us to function.
Well, you know, Fran, as always, you're brilliant. The answer is this, that we have a form of constitutionally divided government, and that's what the difference is between this and a parliamentary system. Here we have these various branches always trying to prove themselves, and that's what's happened in this case. I don't think that these other countries you're referring to, which are either dictatorships or parliamentary systems, have the same potential for problems we do.
Well, more than that, and I don't know the answer to this, but do countries, democracies elsewhere in the world have the same system of electing representatives based on the districts that they live in, based on the gerrymandering that has occurred to set up the districts. I keep coming back to the fact that the way these districts have been now gerrymandered in this country to favor the extremes on both sides makes it virtually impossible for somebody who wants to be a moderate, even if they're of the same party as the dominant party in the district, because the far right or the far left will eliminate those who are more moderate. And thus, a Mitch McConnell, who might by his nature be considered more of a moderate, is afraid that in his state and in his district he could lose election. Well, his state, because he's a senator, because of the way it's been gerrymandered. Now, that's a bad example because it's statewide. But in Congress, that happens all the time.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's happening elsewhere in the world.
And I've already presented a geek solution before, so pardon me for saying it again. But, you know, all these problems are solvable by math.
You can take
a number of unevenly distributed people in a state and figure out how to divide it up into blocks of eligible voters so they're roughly the same, so you get congressional representation and you don't have to worry about
right.
all
so
of that.
So what's
issues.
The motivation for the congressmen and senators to approve such a
absolutely
mechanism?
No political motivation.
Yeah.
You know, getting back to the shutdown, I think the average American still doesn't care about this. I think it doesn't affect them, and especially his base. They don't care. You can shut that government down as long as it takes to get the wall.
And as long as it ain't me.
As long as it's not me, but eventually it probably will be.
Well, we're entering 2 weeks. Tomorrow will be 2 weeks that the government will be shut down, and that is a long time, especially if you're waiting for a paycheck from any of those agencies.
Right.
Other ways that it's affecting is through we read about what it's doing to the U.S. immigration system. Tens of thousands of immigration officers and agents are showing up for work each day to guard the Mexico border, but the government is shut down, so no one is getting paid. The paralysis in bank accounts extends to overburden U.S. immigration courts. New filings are piling up on dockets already backlogged by nearly 1 million cases, but many of the judges and clerks who process them have been sent home. And when U.S. companies' employers want to check the immigration status of potential hires, they are greeted by a red banner across the top of the government's E-Verify website that those services are currently unavailable due to a lapse in government appropriations, which is another way of saying shutdown. Fran brings to our attention the impact that this has on agencies supporting research, and this is grant checks and anything that other funders would have helped with. None of that is going out either, so it's putting all of that work almost to a complete stop, correct?
Well, and then you have thousands of Americans who spent thousands of dollars to plan their vacations to places like Washington, D.C., expecting to go through the museums, and then they walk up to the door at the Smithsonian yesterday and discover that the museum is closed. So it's going to be incremental, but I can't imagine that. I don't disagree with what Judy said, but I can't imagine that is not going to change as this thing lingers, because Americans are going to be upset, and heaven forbid, even though the TSA agents are showing up, they're not being paid. Boy, I hope that there's no carelessness in their work environment that creates a situation that results in a disaster.
So Ira, what are you really telling us here? Trump will change because of the pressure of these people who were basically disenfranchised from going to the museum or whatever else, prohibited from going to the museum? Or, I mean, because I don't see it. I think because of his character, in his own mind, he thinks he's right. He's not going to change. And that's what's so difficult and dangerous about the man.
I think it's less likely that he'll be among the first to change. But I do think that you're going to see changes if there's pressure in Congress.
Where?
And
in the United States Senate?
Yeah.
Those cowards, have they done
well,
anything?
Well, I tell you what, the Republicans, unlike this past election, the next election cycle does not bode well for them based on whose terms are up. There are going to be a lot of Republicans at risk in the next election, and I think they're going to be more sensitive to this than they were last time.
Could be.
So back to what you were
right.
saying, Joe, the research community, you know, it doesn't come to a full stop, but the way people are funded, and now we're talking about a variety of people, not just professors who largely have Oftentimes, the grant money provides some summer money or money for staff or money for graduate students or money for equipment. It means that new money is not happening until the government starts up. It means that the peer review process that allows the funding agencies like the National Science Foundation or National Endowment for the Humanities to decide who gets money, they can't have peer-reviewed meetings. They can't have meetings of any sort whatsoever. If you need to talk to your grant officer, they're not there. And what, you know, how that really impacts the way people operate is if you have a graduate student and they're waiting for a new grant, that graduate student is out of work. That's their only source of income, largely, for the typical graduate student. If you have a piece of equipment and someone needs to maintain that piece of equipment, whether it's a telescope or whether it's a computer or whether it's a, you know, a data storage or, you know, no matter what, you can't pay those people. And universities don't are not flush enough to be able to help you. And they certainly can't help you if you don't have a real guarantee of money. And, of course, they can't talk to the agency.
Well, Harvard, where you teach, certainly has enough money to do it.
I don't teach at Harvard. I teach at RPI.
I know, but you also have this affiliation with
very,
Harvard.
Very wealthy universities have a little bit of slush. But, you know, most universities are not very wealthy universities. And, of course, universities that are most important and you know, community colleges and universities that focus on education rather than research, you know, all of those folks, you know, if they're getting R&D money from NSF or other kinds of agencies, they're out of luck.
So our wonderful friend, let me ask you this question. Do you think any of the guys who are the steam fitters and the other people care about this?
Well, steam fitters are used to help with, you know, if you're operating a large-scale telescope in Hawaii, you may be a steam fitter who's on federal money.
We're talking demographic here. I'm just asking you. I saw Judy.
They don't care. They, in fact, they probably perceive that argument as liberal elites crying
RPI
about
professors
it.
Talk.
Well,
yeah.
They probably are not worried about national parks being closed either.
Right.
But, you know, well, I don't know that. But, you know, they
well,
may not
be more likely
about national
to be,
parks
to
being
feel
closed.
That way about the national parks, right? Because the effluents are overflowing and stinky and all the rest of that when they're walking there, and they are more likely to use it than to be up there in that particular tower made out of ivory that you're in.
I mean, the fact is we're not a country of people with one kind of job. We're a country of people with lots of kind of jobs. Innovation is important. Infrastructure is important. There's lots of jobs that, you know, contribute to our safety and our health and our well-being. And, you know, we're all in it together.
Well, I certainly agree with everything you're saying.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, I don't think it is what is as opposed to what should be.
Yeah.
What is the country's divided up into people who the haves, have-nots. We saw in a presidential election, which was won by a sparse group of people in three states who were among the have-nots and who considered themselves to be screwed by the people at the top. And so that's what happened, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure I can, you know, solve or even address that problem. But, you know, to me, the focus is innovation is a really big part of what makes this country really special.
I get it.
It's given us leadership. It's given us competitive advantage. And what it requires is sort of a long-term commitment to educating people, to research and development, to companies, to innovation.
Hey, friend, I'm not arguing anti-intellectualism.
Let's take a break because we're seconds away. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Ira Fussfeld, Judy Patrick, Fran Berman, and Alan Chartok, who has letters, so we'll begin there.
Okay, here we go. Let's see. Vincent said, shut down. This is a completely nonpartisan statement. To the average American, like myself, this current situation reminds us of children fighting over a toy. So senseless and embarrassing, a disgrace. I'm actually ashamed to be American. Have a wonderful day. Sincerely, Vince from Kingston. All right, there you go. And Luke says, bad example. Mitch McConnell has never been anything close to a moderate. Who said that?
I said it. I'm not necessarily sure I disagree with him. I caught myself. But I suspect that Mitch McConnell might be more of a moderate under different circumstances.
I think, and I hate to say this, I really hate to say this,
but
I think you're right.
Oh man! Well, you know, the great British comedian Peter Cook said, rightly or wrongly, or possibly both.
Yeah. But you know, what I find depraved about Mitch McConnell is he doesn't have any sense of what he owes to the American people as opposed to the politics of his group and their survival.
Without, in my opinion, until and unless, and this answers, I think, in part what Fran was talking about, until there is true leadership in this country from both sides, with politicians getting up and standing up and not talking to their tribal silos, but talking about the greater good of this country.
Yeah, sure.
It's going to be a real rocky ride for the foreseeable future.
Well,
count on me for the idealism this morning.
Well, good for you, Fran.
Well, but you know what? It's not just idealism. It's what this country was built on.
Well, yes.
I believe in the public good.
You go back to the 1700s,
yes,
early 1800s, and look at what they were saying about Tom Jefferson. They were accusing him of everything you ever heard of. The partisanship was so great.
But we go back to the Reagan and Tip O'Neill days, and as much as they had disagreed with each other, at the end of the day, they got a lot of stuff through.
Yeah. Or, as the old saying goes, the old Yiddish expression, Dr. Padilla told me, for example, stinks. So you have one example, but you also have many examples of, of this kind of incredible partisanship that goes on and has always gone on in this country. Okay, so I'm reading now from Tristan in Grafton, New York. Good morning, panel. Can anyone please help me understand the current immigration crisis? The administration says we have a humanitarian crisis on the border and that Homeland Security resources are overwhelmed. Are there a lot more people crossing the border in the last few months than we have ever had under past administrations? Are these people trying to sneak into the country illegally, or people crossing and turning themselves into border authorities in an attempt to gain asylum? I thought illegal immigration numbers have been higher in the past. Why the crisis now? Thank you for helping me understand this better. Wish you all a wonderful 2019, because your answer to your question, Tristan, is it is politically convenient for the president to have this. And practicing Goebbels 1, 2, and 3, you just say the same thing over and over and over, and pretty soon your base begins to believe it.
Alan, my understanding were that the numbers were higher, but also the entry was smaller, right? So people are crowded, and also the constituencies that we're seeing, you know, the immigration service and all of the walls and the border agents and all of that were largely planned assuming that the people coming across the border in many places, and that was certainly true in California, were going to be single men. Right. And now you're seeing families, you're seeing children.
And you're seeing children picked up by parents and thrown over the fence. Well, the parent is still on one side, knowing that the child's future is much better off on the other side, where they will have to be presumed to be there and without being exported back or deported back. So that's interesting that the a level of alarm on the part of the parent would permit them to do that. Think so. Mm. All right. Mm. Okay. So
and
that's
by the way, happy 2019 to Tristan as well.
Oh, happy, yes.
Fran, and everyone.
You're so wonderful. Fran says happy 2019 to all of you. And then we heard from Cantor Devora in Woodstock, New York. I'm wondering whether there is a legal remedy for Congress to override the president's de facto veto of the continuing resolution that they already passed. No, he has to sign it. So he didn't sign it, and since he didn't sign it, it's not law. Am I missing something here?
Oh, that's sort of interesting. If I understand that you have something passed by both houses and he decided not to sign it, and thus there is no veto mechanism. I mean, theoretically, if he says no,
Pocket veto?
Yeah, that's interesting.
All right. And from Martin Wall, Trump's actual campaign pitch was that Mexico would pay for the wall.
Exactly.
Now he's holding the government hostage because he wants us to pay for it. I feel like the Democrats are not hammering this point enough. Pelosi and Schumer should be shouting it from their rooftops and not let him frame the debate. And that's from Marty. Hey, Marty, you know, one thing that is interesting about this is that he did say, I think 2 days ago, that really Mexico was paying for the wall because he was able to do such a fantastic deal with on the new NAFTA that they are in effect paying for the wall.
But
That is not true.
Right, that is not true. It has been debunked on several levels.
But he said it. And Bill says, Russian spy, good morning, panel. Regarding the man who was arrested in Russia and accused of spying, it would seem that Russia did this to have something to trade with for the U.S. with Butina, who is cooperating with Mueller. Do you suppose that the Trump administration, quote, gave them this guy so we would trade Butina to free him, thereby getting her out of Mueller's reach? If so, and proven, does this rise to treason? Well, there's a lot of ifs in that one.
But I think it's possible.
What
don't
a
you?
Crazy world we live in.
You know what? Anything's possible.
All right.
Keep them letters coming.
With that, let's move on to, we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. All right. We did hear from the President of the United States yesterday. He was, before the meeting with leaders talking about the shutdown or talking about border security, he had a cabinet meeting and the press was invited. And for anyone who saw it, it was bizarre. And by our current standards, it was still bizarre. I will read from the Washington Post article by Aaron Blake. President Trump said a lot of strange, untrue things after Wednesday's cabinet meeting, but the most bizarre snippet might have been his history lesson on the Soviet Union. Trump, who has assured us he is the foremost expert on many topics for which he has no formal education or training, gave his own version of why the USSR collapsed, and to be clear, it is his own version. Here's what he said. Russia used to be the Soviet Union. Afghanistan made it Russia because they went bankrupt fighting in Afghanistan. Russia. The reason Russia was in Afghanistan was because terrorists were going into Russia. They were right to be there. The problem is, it was a tough fight. And literally, they went bankrupt. They went into being called Russia again, as opposed to the Soviet Union. You know, a lot of these places you're reading about are no longer part of Russia because of Afghanistan.
I feel like this is what an eighth grade student would say when they were on a test,
when they were caught for not doing their homework.
When they're caught for not doing their homework. Because the Washington Post does a really nice job of going line by line and explaining how none of those things are really true.
You know what? There's several things that are interesting about this. One of which is he is expounding on things about which he has no knowledge, and he must know he has no knowledge, unless there's a psychological reason that overrides everything
else.
He
doesn't know that.
If he believes what he said yesterday was true, that's one problem. If he didn't know it was true and he felt he could just come out in front of the cameras and BS his way for a half hour, that's another problem. I mean, it just goes on and on. At the beginning of his administration, we'd watch something like that and say, unbelievable. We shouldn't be saying unbelievable anymore. This is the way he is. We shouldn't be surprised about it.
So why is it productive, Ira, for him to be that way? You say this is the way that it is. Now, my assumption is he knows that. He also knows when he's telling a fib. He also knows when he gets beat up for telling a fib. But he keeps on doing it. So he thinks it's in his interest to keep doing it, right?
I don't think these are fibs, though.
What do you mean?
I mean, when he says this, I think he's just, I think, don't you think he just walks in there thinking he knows what he's saying?
That's one of the options. He may well think that, because if he didn't know what he was talking about in his own mind, why would he allow the cameras in there to talk about it? If you bring up a subject today on this panel that I can't even, you know, comprehend, I'm not going to sit behind this microphone.
That's
and
why
try
Fran's
to,
here.
Oh, I'm not going to try to talk my way out of it. So he not only... So his pathology may be that he actually thinks what he's saying is true, or it may be that he knows it's not true, but he feels he's such a master at marketing that he could talk his way through it and
But after
I've never thought that. I always think that, you know, bravado and winging it has worked for him before. Exactly. So why
would he do something different? The bravado and winging it would be in the campaign saying Mexico is going to pay for the wall and just keep saying it, and because we don't know how that's going to turn out. But he's rewriting history here. He is speaking authoritatively about the Russia invasion of Afghanistan and completely changing the history that's been well documented history. Do I think he cares? Well, he apparently has no regards for the truth. So in that sense,
he doesn't care.
He
got himself elected president of the United States. He considers himself to be. My sense of it, Fran, for whatever it's worth, is that it's both. It's both that he says, I would have been a great general. I would have been a great general. He said that yesterday. He went to military school, carried a rifle around. I would have been a great general. So he lies. Does he know he's lying? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But he always knows afterwards when everybody comes down on him like a ton of bricks and said, you were lying, and here's the proof that you were lying. No reaction.
You know, I don't think it comes out of thin air, though. I think that there are some ultra-conservatives are whispering some of these things in his ear, and he's taking it to the next level in which he exaggerates because, Afghanistan was a big drain on the Soviets. It was part of the reason, but it wasn't by any means the causation for the fall of the Soviet Empire.
But nobody on either side in our country has ever said Russia invading Afghanistan made sense.
Exactly. But we'll see what I take my clues from what the people on Fox and Friends have to say and to see what they are whispering in his ears. And maybe that's where it came from. I mean, I don't think he has these original thoughts on his own.
Well, the other thing he does, do you recall seeing any of you? CNN did a piece by Jeannie Most, who's sort of their humor news reporter.
And the kicker reporter.
Sort of,
right,
sort
and
of
the, right, always the last report of the hour. And the theme of the report was how Trump knows more than anything about everything.
Right.
And they ran a whole series of clips, and it always begin. Nobody knows more about this than he did it again yesterday. Nobody knows more about drones than I do. Now, again, does he really believe that nobody knows more about drones than he does? Or does he feel he can just say it and nobody will question him about it?
You know, he seems to me to be completely consistent with the person he's always been. And I have a hard time thinking that things like due diligence, things like, empathy, all of these kinds of things that, many of us consider part of rational thought
and decision making.
It just doesn't seem to be part of his makeup. So when he says something like this, it seems unremarkable. He's just consistent with the person that I've perceived him to be.
Because it goes to character, which is something we've said all along. It is his character. He's carried it on in his business relationships. He was a liar then. He's a liar about how much money he has. We all know that. So you're right. It is a matter of character, and you don't change character.
But it is. It's important, and I'm glad that we talk about it. I'm glad that it's called out for the reason that Ira mentioned of that. If you're rewriting history, there should be someone tapping you on the shoulder saying, oh, by the way, he's rewriting history.
Well, we're doing it all the time. So
we are, but nobody in his party is doing it. Nobody in his cabinet is doing it.
You know, they're doing it, Ira, and they're talking to each other. We know this. They talk to each other on the Senate floor, the Republicans, and we keep hearing it from our spies in Congress that they hate the guy.
And guess what? Some of his supporters heard that Afghanistan thread yesterday, and they believed it.
Oh, sure.
And they'll continue to believe it.
But worse than that is many people who watched it on TV believe it. And I don't mean to demean people in saying only stupid people vote for Trump, but there are a lot of people who are not as well-informed as some others, and they'll hear something like that coming from the president of the United States, and they presume that it's true.
Well, that's what you were saying, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. Alan has more letters. We'll go there. And we welcome yours, panel@wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here, Fran Berman, Judy Patrick, and Ira Fussfeld. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Alan has a few, and we just got some more, and we will get started now.
And we love it when you write, gang. Okay. Let's see here. Dixie says, our unusual form of government. If we eliminated the Electoral College and instituted one person, one vote, gerrymandering would no longer be effective. The people might actually achieve what they're voting for. Well, Dixie from East Longmeadow, I would say you're right, of course. But, of course, if you say one person, one vote, you'd have to eliminate gerrymandering, right? In New York State, you're probably aware that the House and the Senate, which was Republican at the time, and the Democratic Assembly couldn't agree on how to do the congressional districts. So what they did is they said, oh, the heck with this. Let the courts do it. So we got probably the fairest congressional districts we've had in a long time as a result of that. But and you're right about Electoral College, but I only have to say, hey, we're getting a lot of letters about the Electoral College. Snap, let's get rid of the Electoral College. Easy for you to say.
Well, wait a minute. What does the Electoral College have to do with gerrymandering?
Not Congress.
Well, these are just two examples of non-democratic ways that we are doing business in this country.
Because even
and
if
I think Dixie knew that.
Yeah, I mean, even if you fairly gerrymander, as Fran described, it wouldn't impact the state-by-state vote. What would eliminate it is the elimination of the Electoral College.
Well,
if you do one person, one vote, you might as well eliminate the U.S. Senate. I mean, that's part of the great compromise.
Yes, it was. You're right. But I don't know. I want to go back to what you just said. You know, the fact is that you used the word gerrymandering, I believe it's a verb, there, and said even fair gerrymandering. You can't have fair gerrymandering. Well, the whole idea of Elbridge Gerry, former governor of Massachusetts, and I believe vice president of the United States, who invented gerrymandering, I think his whole thing was to load the bases, do it illegally immorally.
As that relates to the presidential election, the electoral gerrymandering in and of itself has nothing to do with the presidential election. The Electoral College is the issue with the presidential election as the state-by-state vote gets it. One vote, I mean, if 100 million people in this country vote and one of them gets 55 million votes and the other one gets 45 million, that's the winner, regardless of how the states come out.
Technically, of course, you're right.
Yeah.
I don't have any question about it. Nevertheless, when you get a system of loading things the way that the gerrymander does, the way that, you know, the Electoral College does, it calls for change. Now, we're getting a lot of letters about the Electoral College. We always have. Mm-hmm. But I suspect what you have to answer is, start the constitutional amendment now and count on the Republicans in the United States Senate to help you out there. That's sarcasm in case you can't get that. Okay. Thank you very much for that, Dixie. And Andy says, let's give Trump his wall, but he must pay for it by repealing the tax breaks given to the wealthiest 1% and corporations. How do you think that will sit with him?
It won't sit well.
It won't sit well. Brian says, the president. Isn't it possible that the president is just undisciplined and an unintelligent person?
Yep.
More likely a narcissistic person.
Yep.
As opposed to, he's certainly got a certain kind of cunning, terrible cunning, because we've seen examples in history of similar kinds of cunning, but they get a long way, don't they? Mm-hmm. Electoral College, says Ricky. Hi, panel. Other countries don't have an Electoral College to hinder the success of their elections. The Electoral College has to go.
Okay. Okay.
And Tom from Bonneville says, until Trump feels physical pain from a shutdown, he will not be motivated to end the shutdown. That's a brilliant letter. It is, because when you think about it, you know, this is a guy sitting there, corpulent, you're not supposed to say fat on the radio, and happy. Sitting down there in the White House, getting his meals and the rest of it. What does he care about anybody else?
Why can't you say fat on the radio?
You get a letter from people.
From me.
You get a letter from people who say,
okay.
who say, don't say the word fat.
By the way, he had another untruth among many in his thing yesterday when he was talking about being in the White House alone on Christmas and paddling through the White House and seeing all the guys with the machine guns. As someone pointed out on Twitter, the First Lady was home on Christmas at the White House on Christmas night. So he was not alone, unless, of course, they were in different parts of the White House.
No, they were talking to children and telling them there's no Santa Claus.
Well, that's right. Yeah. 7-year-olds are the marginal ones.
Thanks, here's Mr. a non sequitur for you. In World War II, Winston Churchill came to visit the president, stayed at the White House, as you may remember, and was sort of famous for walking around in delecto after his baths.
Does that mean naked?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's another word maybe we can't
you can say.
Say
you can say naked.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You can't say fat. Okay. Okay, we did that one. And Robert says, confused, please explain why Trump should do anything towards ending the shutdown. He and his base do not care about government and are happy to see it inactive. I don't care what motivation he has to do, anything he doesn't want to do. The only way that will change is if Republicans start to oppose him or if Mueller starts coming after him or his family. I believe the story is not Trump anymore. He's a misbehaving child. The Republicans are allowing this to go on, and they are the story. And that's Robert from Burlington.
It should be noted that the Mueller investigation is not affected by this government shutdown. They are continuing their work. They're funded through some other mechanism.
Huh. I didn't know that. I always learned something here.
Yeah. Mueller's. Yeah. I mean, there are people, the people who are still working are people for whom the funding is either by some other mechanism or it's already passed. So, for example, the National Institutes of Health can give out grants. They've already been funded. National Science Foundation cannot.
Although I just read a story about a guy who, because of the shutdown, for one reason or another, and I apologize because I don't know the reason, couldn't get his insulin and is facing a life-threatening crisis because of the shutdown.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, these things are going to happen more and more.
And Lisa says, Congress and the border wall. I would think that the reason that Congress gets paid during shutdowns would be fairly obvious, so that the president can't strong-arm them into accepting terms that they don't agree with. Just because a person isn't blue-collared, in quotes, or makes above a specific amount doesn't mean they aren't paycheck to paycheck, and are plenty of upper-class folks with very large lifestyles with the bills to match. And that's Lisa. Thank you, Lisa. And then Brucey says, a moderate under other circumstances is a conservative, anti-democratic, enabler, destroyer. What good is invisible moderation?
Is this a reference to Mitch McConnell?
May have been. May have been. I have Mitch McConnell, as you may know, or I probably said on the show this week, is third on my list of terrible people in America.
Who's number one and two?
Who's number one?
Trump is number one.
Number two?
Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, all right.
Number four? Did you go that far?
No. Four and five.
I'm not that kind of student.
Okay. Just saying.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll have more letters. We certainly have more topics. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. And let us get to some other topics and we'll move on and see what else is going on here. Let us, since we have Fran in the room, let us talk about artificial intelligence.
Is that a shot?
I don't know.
Could be.
Okay. He thinks I have artificial intelligence.
Nicely put, Jim.
Could be. But AI, right?
Yeah.
So what is the latest on this front, which is basically export controls? Now, I barely know what AI is, so when it comes to export controls on AI, then I'm really up a creek.
Well, export controls basically involve being protective of our technologies and not allowing other countries to get them. And so the Department of Commerce has this period of comment for public comment on some proposed export control limitations on various technologies, and this includes artificial intelligence, and in particular within artificial intelligence, it includes vision and speech recognition and natural language understanding. When you think of natural language understanding, think about Watson. Remember when Watson won Jeopardy?
Yeah.
And Watson had to understand the question. Right? And sometimes we're sarcastic, and sometimes words have different meanings. And so for a computer to understand that, you know, it takes algorithms, and it takes, you know, some sort of strategizing. And so the idea that artificial intelligence would come under export control is something they would like comment on. But they think of, and by the way, they think of this technology, like other technologies that export control is applied to, as dual use, which means you can use it commercially, you know, the robots that, you know, vacuum your home, and you can use it for military applications, drones and whatever. This is really problematic. This is like saying, you know, and now I'm really going out on a limb here, you know, you can't export math. You know, artificial intelligence is a technology people use to solve problems. And like other kinds of technologies and research that people do, it's done collaboratively all over the world.
So give us a sense. So the Commerce Department is considering these national security restrictions on artificial intelligence. Where do we stand now on it, and what would the changes do to it?
So right now, artificial intelligence, like lots of other things you learn in a university or in a school setting or in training or, you know, online, is really an approach to a problem. It's an approach to a problem by imbuing the algorithm, the technology, the machine with a capacity to make decisions itself.
But here's my question to you, and we're so glad we have you here today. My question is, at what point do they begin to program themselves? In other words, somebody starts them off, and the machines are basically, we're obviated because the machines are the master race.
Well, so let's not go there yet. In terms of programming themselves, they're programmed to learn. They're programmed to learn from the data that they have.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes they learn well and sometimes they don't learn well. And it's problematic to think about exporting that. And, you know, it's really unlikely machines will be the master race anytime soon. We could do a whole show on that, Alan.
But, scary.
But it's unlikely to me that machines will be a master race. I mean, what we're experimenting with at this point in time is creating algorithms that learn and try to make good decisions. But the problem is, you know, there's ethics involved. We've seen a lot of decision making that we would consider unethical. There is bad data. You know, you can learn from bad data. You don't necessarily make good decisions. The way we make decisions is not necessarily always a good way to make decisions. And so the academic and the research community and companies, people all over the world are looking at these technologies to try to understand them. If you restrict the sharing of them in the normal way that people share, they're collaborating in teams, they're trying to solve problems all over the world, you really hamper our ability to be innovative. Because people will continue doing the same thing, sharing the information all over the world. Moreover, one of the things I think people aren't thinking about is the way to make AI safer and better is to make it more transparent and explainable. So Microsoft, I think I've talked about this before, Microsoft put out a chatbot called Tay, which was supposed to be a friend to young people online. And because the learning algorithm was not sufficiently protective, it became a Nazi in 16 hours, and they had to pull it off. So if you think about these things and how it's hard to explain how it learns, how it's hard to explain how ethics comes into it, you know, it you know, restricting it by making it export control is going in exactly the wrong direction. But this makes no sense to me in lots of different ways.
One of the points of the article too, just to exactly what you were saying, but let us not forget what China is doing, what Japan is doing, what other countries are doing, that if you hold back in any way, then if there is, I don't know if you would consider it a race, but just to keep up with the rest of the world, we would then be losing that.
We would be losing that, because if you think about yourself as an AI researcher, And if there's ways you're limited in the U.S. from operating, but, you know, you're not limited in other places, there are a lot of people who are not going to come to the U.S. and work with us. There are a lot of people who will not be able to collaborate with people elsewhere. And but you're not going to get the best of the best.
But, Fran, there are so many obvious questions that we all have of you, and you've touched on many of them here. There is the matter of ethics. There is the matter of who's doing the programming. I mean, you know, if you have a dictatorship like China is, and we say we want to cooperate with them, and we give to them, and we all know they don't give back to us if they can avoid it, there are some real questions as to whether or not it's healthy to have this transparency because it's one-sided.
Well, there's a difference between the medium itself, the AI research and AI development and, you know, AI use in products, and the use of those things. And, you know, I think your point is they shouldn't be used in ways that don't support the public good.
Wouldn't, shmouldn't. But the fact of the matter is that they will be. We know that human nature is that. I keep thinking of the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain there. And if the Wizard of Oz had access to AI...
But we don't stop doing chemistry because you can create poisons, and we don't stop doing physics because there have been atomic bombs.
Well, that's all true, but we may be
we
talking...
We shouldn't stop doing AI just because there are some poor uses and poor applications
Well,
of
I don't
AI.
Think we should stop doing AI. I think there is a question as to how we handle it. Anyway, you want me to read or not, Joe?
Sure, read away.
Okay. Susan says... Shutdown trickles down. It's just not federal employees who are not being paid, nor parks and museums close to taxpayers. It trickles down to anyone who needs to communicate with a federal agency. The IRS reported my 92-year-old mother's 2017 income incorrectly to Social Security. Social Security, in turn, imposed an IRMAA, IRMA, I don't know what that is, income-related monthly adjustment amount, doubling my mother's Medicare premium. I have until January 26 to appeal, but SS closed a letter from IRS, requires a letter from IRS stating the correct income. I can't reach the IRS to get that letter. If the shutdown doesn't end soon, my mother will be penalized for the entire year, real hardship for someone that is on a fixed income. We deserve good government. End the shutdown, Susan and Manolis.
Don't you think that's the sort of case that multiplied by millions in this country? And sure. If everybody who has that problem writes to their congressman or senator, they'll start hearing from the public.
Yeah, good point, Ira. Good morning, panel. I'm writing for the first time, says Joan. Regarding your conversation on the Electoral College and fixes to our voting system, I would like your thoughts on the chance of New York ever going to open primaries like California and to ranked voting like Maine. Well, I happen to think both of those are good. Now that the Republicans are out of the state Senate, it may well be that things like, you know, well, neither of those are good examples. I'll tell you why. No question, if you have an open primary like we do in Massachusetts, basically, you can be non-enrolled and you can vote in either primary. It's a great system. I love it. But these guys in both the Senate and the Assembly got there under the old system. And they're not about to make it easier now that they're in control. It doesn't really affect them as Republicans or Democrats. What would affect them is making it easier to vote in New York State. So if you make it easier, right, Judy, if you make it easier, you say you can vote 30 days in advance, you can do it by mail, you can do it by computer, that's going to help the Democrats. And that they'll do, I think. All right. Tara says, hi, panel. Lindsey Graham is number 4 on the list of terrible people.
They're completing your list for you.
Followed by Mike Pence. I'd also like to put Jared Kushner and Trump's kids and wife on that list. Have a great deal. Take care, Day. Take care, Tara. The ego speaks. His ego overshadows everything else for him. He's never felt accountable for anything in his life. So why should he act differently now? He believes in himself. Whatever that means, if he had to stop even for a second, he couldn't live with himself, whatever that might mean, Russ. And then Anthony says, Trump speaks in simple optics. Optics his base can understand. The Russian-Afghan war was more about political ideology than terrorism, something his base would not understand, Anthony.
But, you know, as I think I said earlier, it's dangerous to describe his base as ignorant. There are a lot of smart people, and that's the mystery to somebody like me. You know, it's one thing to say, I'm going to continue to support Trump because he's going to get conservative judges in and because we're going to get this tax cut and on and on and on. But they are ignoring what he is doing to the very fabric of the country. And a lot of smart people are ignoring that, too. And as are legislators who can do something about putting a brake on this. And they're all letting the narrow interests overshadow the greater good.
All right. And Catherine says, Trump and the truth. I think we need to reorder our expectations of Trump's ability to tell the truth. He takes grains of facts, words whispered in his ear, ungrounded statements best heard from a bar stool, and reweaves them according to his own limited processing. He has a personality disorder, is incapable of breaking out of his own narcissistic bubble. It would be one thing if he were on that bar stool, but being president of the United States, he has the power to amplify this for all to hear.
That's a great analogy. He's the Cliff Clavin of presidents.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody remember Cliff Clavin from Cheers?
Oh, I can't believe you knew his last name.
Oh, well, I'm impressive. A font of useless information.
Derek says, Trump's version of history, could Trump's version of Soviet history be a roundabout justification of Putin invading former Soviet states in attempts to revive the Soviet Union? Currently, there is a massive Russian military buildup of close to 100,000 troops and 1,000 tanks on the Donbass-Ukraine border just waiting to invade. You know, one thing that is not being mentioned in these Afghanistan questions is we're in Afghanistan. And so, you know, what is our purpose being there? We know that the Russians got kicked out by the Osama bin Ladens and the people like that. We know that those are the same people who are giving us a very rough time. We know from books like The Kite, what is it, Joan? The Kite Runner?
Yeah,
Kite Runner. That a lot of people, if we weren't there or if the Taliban were in charge, would be suffering greatly. Huh. Jim says, is Trump oblivious to the real world? Harry Reid. New York Times article about Harry Reid by Mark Leverich. That got a lot of coverage yesterday. Reid said about Trump, I think he's a person who is oblivious to the real world. Anybody on that one?
Yeah, Harry Reid. I read that and I didn't disagree with him, but I was thinking that Harry Reid is the wrong messenger.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean? The oblivious to the real world. Trump is the president of the United States. He got there through his own terrible mechanisms, which he understood and did. So how is he oblivious? He knows it full well, and he's taking full advantage of it. Anyway, James says, following a president who is not qualified, we need to follow Trump's oscillating moves, but we might be careful to stay away from too much coverage because this is his food. Deprive him of his food, speak less about him and more about the country's need. Follow a crazy and you get crazy. James from Hartwick.
I was going to mention that. You recall that the media in doing its self-examination of the election going into the next election generally agrees that they gave Trump too much time by running his rallies unedited and in their entirety. And there's particularly MSNBC and CNN have gotten away from that. Yet all three cable news networks yesterday ran the entirety of that cabinet nonsense. Just let him go, and it's
yeah,
with
but
the
I don't
same.
Know how you.
But what you do is just what you're supposed to do as journalists. You take the feed and you look at the feed and you edit the parts that need editing, and you put in context the lies. And by running this stuff unedited and unchallenged, there are people, as you guys know in broadcasting, who drop in and out. They're not there. They may have just heard his rewriting of history about Afghanistan, and that's all they know. Because nobody immediately said, no, that's not right.
Well,
I agree with that, though, because a lot of times I'm listening to TV, and there's somebody interpreting something that's gone on, and I think, what are these people's credentials?
After the fact,
why do they? You know. why is their opinion a valuable opinion to me? And a lot of times I can't answer that question.
You mean the panelists on the various
cable shows?
Yeah, on
these various talk shows.
Yeah, supposedly they bring in people who have some expertise.
Did they have a degree in political science? Did they serve? Yeah.
Well, are they
just some random person talking about it?
But do you disagree with the part about them running that half hour, just letting it go, free airtime?
But if it were President Obama, and you were coming out of a cabinet meeting,
disagree, yeah.
And there was a press availability for a half hour, would we run it? Yes, we would run it.
Yeah, well, I think we need to rethink
that.
Yeah,
it's like our government at work. Yeah. We might not like how it's operating, but it's our government at work.
No, well, I agree with Ira. I think that the letting him run unedited has done us a disservice. I think that's the role of the press, is to provide the context. Real reporters covering this after the fact, that don't just give him. It was an hour and a half, wasn't it?
It was almost 2 hours, and you're right, but it's the President of the United States speaking at a cabinet meeting at the White House.
But
I don't know how you get away from that.
This is a President of the United States who is a habitual liar. You've just given your whatever time.
But is that the press's? I mean, I think that I agree with you that you then go and you call it out, but. If it is an event that's happening, I mean, that's the same thing to say if the president is going to make an address to the nation at 9 o'clock at night, are you going to say we're not going to run it?
There is a precedent for that.
And I hate to support Joe on this because I just don't like to.
Being the people he doesn't like, right. he can't support us.
What number are you?
But my question.
9 and 10, I think.
I don't agree with either Ira or Judy. I agree with Joe.
I'm
not through.
But before you finished, weren't you a critic of the network showing the rallies?
All the rallies?
Yes, because I think that's an entirely different thing. I think that is a political effort as opposed to the President of the United States meeting with his cabinet. Now, I don't like the guy. I can't stand him. I think he's bringing this country down and all the rest of it. The problem is that the minute you say, cut him up and start to tell you what you were hearing, demeans the American public and saying, okay, then you're not capable of listening to something and making a decision on your own about what was being said.
Do you think
that's
why
the two of you are absolutely wrong.
Do you think that was a genuine cabinet meeting and a genuine discussion of world affairs?
Well, what does that
or
mean,
do you think
genuine?
That was a real cabinet meeting where they discussed real issues, where cabinet members spoke up about what was happening.
Yeah, but how do you define that?
You defined it as more substantial information than what we heard yesterday.
Well, you know, we want to believe you and Ira because we're basically all on the same side here in terms of what we're thinking about this guy. Nevertheless, you're wrong.
No, you're wrong because do we breathlessly report every single tweet this man tweets? No, because you have to put it in context. That's what's gotten us in this problem in the first place.
Who's the contextualizer is the question.
In an actual government meeting where the government is at work.
But wait a minute, it wasn't the cabinet meeting that we saw. We saw after the cabinet meeting ended when the so-called spray, the press pool, came in.
That is a good point.
To answer questions.
What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with them asking the questions. There's nothing wrong with recording the answers to the questions. There's something wrong with letting that guy go off on a half-hour monologue, occasionally interspersed with questions that wound up giving him more fuel.
Wouldn't you
have wanted to see a presidential press conference with Obama?
Yeah, with a presidential press conference, sure, and he didn't do a lot of them.
Come on. You know, everybody out there is saying, yeah, you give it to him, Ira. You give it to him, Judy. But the fact of the matter is, Fran's excellent question goes right to it, which is, what if it were Obama?
What's going to happen?
Would you be yelling this way? You probably wouldn't.
What's going to happen a year from now or less when there are 35 Democratic candidates all fighting to get airtime in their run for the nomination, and they get precious little press coverage? And the president, because he's got the bully pulpit, and he will get as much coverage as he wants when he will misuse it as a campaign opportunity.
Well, it's a contextual, question.
He doesn't know what to say now.
I know what to say because it's so silly.
But there were 17.
The fact of the matter is, if there's a contest going on, they're going to cover it. They're going to cover the president. It's not either
ask
or. Come on, Ira.
Ask the 16 Republicans who lost to Trump in the primaries last year, and the 16 combined.
What do you want to ask them?
I want to know how they feel about the amount of coverage Trump gets when Trump got more than the other 16 combined.
Well, he said more outrageous things.
That
well,
but
that
is that the
mark? Problem of our press.
That's not the, that should not be the way the press judges.
I'm moving on.
There will be timeouts immediately after the roundtable.
Okay.
Today.
Eric says, I think Trump's facts should be taken lightly as they are a ploy to send critical individuals into a fact search frenzy while he's pushing a bigger agenda without pushback. I would look forward of the facts and into his planned agenda. As Allen states regularly, he became president. That's not dumb luck.
It was dumb luck.
It may be
evil, threaded the needle.
And Glenn said, owning the message. Trump has redefined what it means to be a Republican, and most of the other Republicans have acquiesced to that definition. The Dems must hold them to the new definition and what it stands for. I agree with Glenn, for whatever it's worth. And Paul says, we are missing the real story. Trump is the sideshow that the media and your panel relentlessly focuses on. The real story is the dismantling of the federal government by corporate oligarchs. You touch on oligarchs, the evil Mitch McConnell and the oligarchical man, the top leader in Washington. He is no moderate. Paul from Saratoga. And Matthew says, do we think Trump stated this oversimplification of the USSR collapse featuring Afghanistan to rationalize pulling troops out from Syria and Afghanistan, returning these areas to a Russian sphere of influence. Real reason why Mattis left? Question mark. Bob says, cabinet meeting was just more political show. You guys have been catering to your own base, Judy and Ira. And
right, exactly. So that letter
right
could have been, Judy and Ira were right.
Thank you, Bob.
Cabinet meeting was just, okay, except for C-SPAN, there's no reason to run wall-to-wall coverage of any governmental event, whether it's a press conference or so-called cabinet meeting, which is mere babbling. Other outlets should exercise editorial judgment, says Bob.
Love C-SPAN.
And Vincent says, comment. One thing that could be done with the Electoral College is to eliminate state winner-take-all and make it proportional.
Yes.
Right now, we have an inconsistent hodgepodge.
Way to go.
Yeah. These guys, as I keep telling everybody, you know, there was proportional representation in New York City for years. Then a couple of communists like Vito Marcantonio got elected, and that was the end of proportional representation.
Well, but that's the way to get rid of the Electoral College without getting rid of the Electoral College.
Sure. Just snap your fingers and say, out with you, Electoral College.
Yeah, just say it's proportional.
Yeah. Jack says, Electoral College, would the Electoral College system be more democratic, in quotes, if their votes were distributed proportionally instead of a winner-take-all? I believe a few states do this. Would this new Congress support that change? Are you kidding? No, because they wouldn't be there. Either the Democrats or the Republicans.
You're breaking my heart.
Yeah. I am so sorry, because if there's one person, there's one person whose heart I do not wish to break,
don't break
it's yours.
My heart.
And Claudia says, panel. Hi, panel. We have a president who is an actor pretending to be a president. He reads scripts and believes them and expects his base to believe. He wants an Oscar. We need to realize this and stop believing. And that's from Claudia. And you know what? I was thinking as I read that letter, an actor pretending to be president, he reads scripts and believes them and expects his base to believe he wants an Oscar. All I could see is Ronald Reagan.
Somebody tweeted yesterday that if you view the Trump presidency as a reality show, that the third year, January 1st, is the beginning of season 3, and Mitt Romney has been injected as the villain in the season 3 reality show. So that would happen on House of Cards.
So what's your point?
That this is the
Mitt Romney is Jimmy Smith.
No, that this is the way the world is working with the presidency. It's all
Alan Alda. I don't know which.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take. We're gonna wrap up. Thank you very much.
Ira said that's enough.
We thank you for your time, Ira, Judy, Fran, Alan. Thank you all. We'll be back after this.